Hello there, and welcome back, finally, to the Pocket Gamer Podcast. It's episode number 496, technically speaking, but more on that later. My name is James Gilmore. Joining me today is Matthew Ford.
Hello.
We totally did a podcast that no one's going to be able to hear because of audio errors. Naturally, it was the best podcast we'd ever recorded. I mean, I don't know
obviously.
If you agree. So I'm really sorry about that, but audio errors on my part. There's obviously been this big gap because I went away and got married, and there was in Colombia again to the same woman, I hasten to add. But, you know, I traveled, so I wasn't here for like 2 weeks. And then we tried to record and then it failed, and an endless litany of good excuses. But the point is, we're sorry that we've been away, but now we are back. And we are back in a completely different mobile landscape, basically. We were talking about this beforehand, but like before we left, there was no Apple Arcade, there was no Google Play Pass, and now the world is a completely different place. My soul has completely changed. How's yours, Matthew?
Yes, forget everything you know.
I know.
Everything's changed, yeah. For the better or worse, that's the question.
I know, right? Free to play, not anymore. Now you pay. You pay every month, whether you like it or not. And that is the majority of what we'll be talking about today. We've got Apple Arcade chat, Google Play Pass chat. Plus, we will be taking a look at big new releases, including the likes of Mario Kart Tour, which is now out, and Link's Awakening on the Switch, and its frame rates and all the other stuff we need to chat about. So let's dive straight in. For years now, we've been hearing people complaining about free-to-play games. This is the vocal minority, I grant you, the people who maybe read Pocket Gamer and have a genuine enthusiast interest in games and have done their whole life, tend to be the people who object most to the free-to-play system and then champion when free-to-play games are maybe overtaken by premium content. And we do cover a lot of that on PG. Apple and Google Play seem to have heard your call whilst also having one eye turned towards Netflix and Amazon Prime and all the other subscription services. And to that end, they have both launched their new subscription services. Apple Arcade came first, and then shortly after that, Google went, oh yeah, just doing this Google Play Pass thing as well. And so, you know, just pure coincidence. Who knew?
Mm. Funny they announced it on the same day as well.
It's very surprising that, isn't it? But what we're here to do is, I've had a go at Apple Arcade. We've got it. We've got the month subscription. You can go and download it for free right now because they give you 4 weeks trial that you'd have to charge for.
Also, if you've bought an iPhone recently, you get a free subscription for a year.
Do you? I didn't know that.
Yeah, I think it's any new iPhone devices, anything from any Apple products, I believe, you can pretty much get
wow.
a year subscription.
Holy cow. Okay, that's important knowledge. Good to know. But I've downloaded it, and I looked at it and went, cool, there's about 30 games there, until someone's like, hit the see all at the bottom of the scroll all the way down, hit see all, and then suddenly 30 becomes like 70 games, yeah. Which surprised me. Like, that's a hidden thing. Like, I was really caught off guard by the fact that they didn't, like, just let you scroll through all 70, because initial look, if you just have a quick glance, you think there's only 30 games.
Mm. And it's got, like, obviously it's a dedicated section now on the App Store and everything.
Yeah, yeah. And so they've got their... These are all premium games, or would be premium games if they were released individually. And importantly, they are all currently exclusive to Apple. So we'll go through the track list in a minute. The other side of that coin is Google Play's Pass. Now, this is another £5 a month, or $4.99, $5.99 subscription service, just like Apple. This one gives you around about 350 games. However, a lot of these games aren't subscription games. A lot of these games aren't exclusive games. They're games that have already been out on Google or on iOS or indeed PC for a while already. But their push is these are premium experiences. You won't see any free-to-play stuff in this big old list. So do you run Android or iPhone, first of all?
I've got a brand new iPhone 11 XR. This recently, so...
That's why you know about subscriptions, isn't it? Very
you've
nice.
You've got me there, yeah.
Okay, slightly sidebar. How's the phone? How's the new versions?
It's terrific. It's a big upgrade from what I've had before. So yeah. I had the 6S for a while, so
oh.
I was overdue a big upgrade. But already, you know, games that will come on to like Sayonara or Wild Hearts, which I blasted through. It's just stunning. You know,
it's nice, isn't it?
Gorgeous on the phone, yeah.
Well, I've been, you know, running on a slightly older phone than you, but we should have a look at the actual the playlist of the stuff that you can get. So, well, the ones I've had a closest look at are the ones I've done videos of. So, starting with Sayonara Wild Hearts, I've played about, I don't know, maybe 8-10 levels of that. You said you've raced through it. A really unusual entry from Samogo, who are the guys behind like Yearwalk and Device 6 and these kind of quirky, very, very indie games. This one is this like neon retro explosion of rhythm action, which draws from classic auto-runner games. So it's almost like a three-lane auto-runner, but with all this other stuff thrown in where you have to stop and do like Dance Dance Revolution bits and the camera whips around all over the place so you never quite know which way you're looking. And I was kind of dazzled by this. You said you liked it.
I did, yeah. It's super psychedelic and, as they describe it, a pop album video game.
Yeah.
And they're not wrong, you know. It's quite mental, but in the good way. Because one second you'll be riding skateboards, then you're jumping on motorbikes, and then you're on flying on a playing card. It's bizarre, but in the best way possible. And shout out to the soundtrack, because I've been listening to it all week on my travels. Like, I've literally just had it rolled up on Spotify.
A lot of people have been saying that.
Yeah, it's something special. It's really cool.
And there is a mode, as I understand it, if you complete the game, you can then play the entire game as one long rolling track.
That's right.
And that's the mode that everyone says, like, that kicks ass. If you think some levels are strong and some are weaker, just play the whole thing through as, like, an album, and it is an incredible experience. So, yeah, big departure for Samogo, but I'm on board with it. It's a great time.
Yeah, and it's only 2 hours as well, so it's you know, but it's a solid 2 hours. I'd fully recommend it.
Totally. You've got the return of a classic product, or a classic franchise, I suppose, Choo Choo Rocket Universe, which is the sequel to, a long belated sequel to Choo Choo Rocket, which came out on the Dreamcast. So this is dipping back into the classical realms of weird space cats chasing weird little space mice. But it's a grid-based game if you've never played it, and the idea is you drop tiles with arrows on them to change the directions of the mice to get them towards a rocket ship and escape. And it's all maze-like, and the cats are chasing you, and the trick is not to get caught and all the rest of it. So if you play the original, you know what you're dealing with. This one has a little bit of Super Mario Galaxy thrown in, because you're hopping from planet to planet, and some of the planets are spherical, so you have to spin them around in order to see all the tiles and see the track of where the mice are going to run. Have you had a go at this one yet?
I haven't yet. No, I did see the trailer. It did look interesting. And then obviously Choo Choo Rocket's a name that I do recognize from being...
It's got a big pedigree. People were super, super fans of it. And it was another cult one, because the whole Dreamcast project became a cult thing after it got killed before its time, some would argue. But there's a video of that up on YouTube that we put up. So go and have a look at that one. Probably the biggest one, or the one everyone's been talking about the most of the Apple Arcade releases, is Oceanhorn 2. Did you get your hands on this?
I've loaded it up and probably played about an hour.
Okay.
It is a huge experience by the looks of it, and it's, you know, it's basically Breath of the Wild, isn't it, on your mobile. That's clearly what they're, you know, taking the inspiration from,
kind of, like. And I think Breath of the Wild, this was in development at the same time as Breath of the Wild or before it, so I imagine that there's a crossover more with, for me it was like Twilight Princess in terms of the setup of it, like the way that you've got the third person perspective camera following Link around, rather than the sort of top-down isometric view you got in the original Oceanhorn, which was riffing arguably on something like Link Between Worlds.
Yes, or Link to the Past. Yes. Yeah.
So it's managed to do what it's trying to do really, really well, I think. I've played a bunch of it as well. There's a hands-on video up, so go and see footage of it on the YouTube channel. It does feel big, as you say, and it looks fantastic. They've changed the controls in a way that really suits, because the first one, you were just kind of using a single, you know, virtual stick to guide your character around. Whereas this time you have to deal with camera movement and things like that, because it's an over-the-shoulder third person. Feels very comfortable to me. You've got the dodge rolls in and as by double tapping, and that feels comfortable as well. The combat is nice. It's simple because it's, you know, Zelda combat, but it's got some chunk, and the visuals are fantastic. The only sort of caveat for me with this game is the first game was released in a landscape where there would never be a Nintendo game on mobile. That was so the idea of releasing Oceanhorn was, well, you're never going to be able to play Zelda, so here's an alternative, and, you know, it's very, very close, but who's going to care? Now, Nintendo's on mobile, and we're almost certainly going to get a Zelda game on mobile. So now suddenly Oceanhorn 2 is kind of going to be in direct competition with Nintendo's own property, which it's clearly cribbing from.
Yeah, I think it'll still be able to stand on its own, because I imagine when Nintendo do come to Zelda, they won't be doing their Breath of the Wild version on mobile. They'll do something different, you know, which like they have with other properties, or take other aspects away to not feel, not exactly like you would get a console Zelda, but more akin to mobile.
I think you're right. And I also think that this will go on to the backlash from Mario Kart Tour, which we'll talk about in a little bit, because I don't think Nintendo want to release a premium-style big adventure game. I think Nintendo are trying to crack the free-to-play market in a way that works for them. And we'll see this in Mario Kart Tour. So I think you're right. They wouldn't do a game like this. They would try and change Zelda into a more stripped-down mobile form, and with some free-to-play elements. So perhaps this is the closest we'll get to something like a Twilight Princess or Breath of the Wild. Either way, like anything we mention here, you can just go and try for free. And we think Oceanhorn is definitely worth your time. I've also been able to have a tinker around with some other stuff. So smaller games like Super Impossible, whatever it's called, Super Impossible Road Track. Do you remember Impossible Road, the first game?
Yes. Rogue Games.
Yes, Rogue Games, your little roly ball, and you're just rolling down. It was a very simple, almost like one of those voodoo games, where you're just rolling a ball down a track, and the track would twist and turn. It was like super stripped back, and, you know, like one or two colours, really minimal, but quite sort of pretty and psychedelic. And it was tilt-controlled. Here, it feels much more like a Wipeout F-Zero type experience. Don't know if you've tried it.
I haven't, no.
No. And so the tracks look like Wipeout tracks, and the ball suddenly is this mecha ball with loads of weird mechanical attachments onto it, and it defaults to a tap left or tap right steering, and it's you're racing against a whole bunch of other balls as well. I've only played it for about half an hour. Really quite good fun. It's simple pick up and play stuff, don't get me wrong, and there is a multiplayer aspect as well, but the challenges are interesting, because you have to do time challenges, and you can try and do runs where you never fall off the side, because there's this rewind ability when you drag back on the screen where you can just pull the ball back onto the track if it's fallen off. I was quite impressed by that in a simple, entertaining way. It's not going to, you know, blow your socks off or anything, but kind of cool. I was enjoying it. Overland is a weird one.
Mm. Yeah, I dipped into this briefly as well.
So it's like a turn-based adventure game in which you're in some like alien weird things are trying to take out people. I only played like the first like 50 minutes, half an hour. It's quite kind of cold open, as in it just throws you in and you're like, I have no idea what I'm supposed to do.
Yeah, figure it out. I sort of liked that though. It was, I'm still not entirely sure what's going on.
No, nor am I. But my feeling is like weird world invasion or some apocalypse or something like that.
Yeah, but it's like a strategy title, isn't it? And it, yeah. It's definitely got, yeah, as you say, a turn-based mechanics and everything. It feels satisfying to play.
It does. And when you work it out as well, even just the very beginning where you move a character out of the way, move him down the road, try and get to a car. And it's kind of like XCOM in as much as you tap on the character and you can see a little movement area beyond which you can't travel. And then once you've done your movement, you have to hit end turn, and then the enemies have a turn, or the world has a turn, if you like. So you run to this car that's at the end of the road, and you try and get in, and it's like it's not going anywhere. You can't work out why. So you wander out a bit and then look through some bins, and you find a petrol tank, and you're like, oh, okay, I have to go and put the petrol in the car. And so you jump in the car with the petrol tank, and he puts it on the back, and the car won't start. It's like, oh, I've actually got to put the petrol in the car first, then get, okay, here we go. And then so it's really like blow by blow, and it rewards you through failure, or it instructs you through failure.
Yes.
Which is kind of cool. I haven't played enough of it to work out the big broad strokes, but it wasn't what I expected, and that's quite nice.
Yeah, that was a nice surprise.
Fair play to that. Now, there is a huge, and I do mean huge, list of these games. Are there ones that you've played that I haven't mentioned yet?
So, a couple. So, Rayman Mini, I've tried out.
Yes.
Very similar to Rayman Jump.
Yep.
It's another Rayman game on mobile, and Rayman Jump is fantastic. So,
and same like Rayman Jungle Run and Fiesta and all that stuff.
Yes,
from
exactly.
Past.
It's just yeah. It just seems a new entry in that. I've played the first world. It seems more of the same. It seems like they've got a few more advanced, more controls. Mm-hmm. Again, if you enjoy this sort of game, you've enjoyed the previous Rayman games, I think you'll enjoy this. And it's just a pretty solid, nice, calming, easy experience, I feel like. They're not that difficult until you get to the proper later levels. Otherwise, Neo Cab is a game I've invested, what, about 3-4 hours in so far? I'm quite hooked on
that. I've not seen this one.
So it's the one where you're basically an Uber driver.
Oh, okay.
This girl, Lena, I believe her name is. Lena. I think it's Lena. She moves to, it's basically Los Angeles, but in the future, like futuristic right. version. And it's story driven. So how it works is you have to have conversations with whoever you're giving taxis to, basically.
Oh, and then, I have seen a video of this. Sorry, I completely lied. I didn't know it was this game.
Yeah, and then how it works, it plays off your emotions. Mm-hmm. So you'll be having a conversation. If the person in your car says something you don't really agree with, your emotions, the character of Lena, her emotions will be affected, and she'll either go into like the red zone or possibly the, I think it's like excited, calm, and then depressed zone. So like certain responses she won't be able to give because she's that angry at what they've said or something.
Right.
And the whole point of it is to basically try and have a good star rating from whoever, you know, getting 5 stars.
Whilst not completely losing your S.
Yes, without losing your occupant. Yeah, keeping it all together. But there's a whole story of basically her friend that she's moved to visit. I think basically she was an ex-girlfriend. I'm still not 100% sure on that, but it's sort of giving that vibe off. But it's perfect for on the go. Absolutely perfect. I think it's on Switch as well, but for me, I've been, you know, playing it all the time on the go.
That's really interesting. They tag it as an emotional survival game, which is pretty much what you described there. I'm totally downloading this. I've got traveling to do. I've got to run off and go to Helsinki for the next PGC event, which is next week. I will see you there if you're there. But this sounds ideal for travel business. I'm all over that.
Absolutely. Surprise Attack Games, yeah, that's who it is. So shout out to them. And the last one that I've played properly, well, I've jumped into a few, so like Agent Intercept and stuff, which is like a spy race again. That's a load of fun. It's weird how they've brought out the levels though. They seem to be rolling them out as events.
Oh, okay. Kind of like a Hitman thing, episodes or something.
Yeah, a little like that. What was the final game I played? Oh, it was What the Golf.
Oh, I've heard good things.
Yes, so this has been appearing at many of Pocket Gamer's indie showcases and everything.
It has.
Lots of fun, yeah. It's a physics-based game. Obviously, you're playing golf, but it's anything can be the golf ball.
Yeah.
So the first level is you hit the golf ball into the golf hole. And then the next level, you go to do exactly the same, but the man instead becomes the golf ball. And then you're just like flicking him into the vicinity of the green and it just spirals out of control from there and you just get different madder and madder mechanics. But it's a lot of fun. It feels very original, to be fair. And I think it's easy to pick up and I'd recommend it.
It's got the element of surprise when you're playing through. I've seen this at the showcases and it's just like physics lunacy and a really nice idea. The thing with the Apple Arcade is we've just touched on maybe like 10 games there, like 5 or 10 games. But by dumping like 70 in your lap, we've just been trying to sort of wade through and see what's good. And it's really difficult to sort of spend a good couple of hours with 70 games. Mm. So there's a lot of pilling and pulling and picking. And we've got some stuff up on pocketgamer.co.uk, which shows you what we think are our top games from the list. If you want to just grab a few that we reckon you'll enjoy. Plus, there will continue to be videos going up on the YouTube channel documenting the best games and the gameplay from them. So go and have a look at those. The Google Play side of things. Now, I have an Android phone itself. The thing with this is, it's not like I've suddenly got a whole ton of new games and I've started downloading them and going, oh my God, because I've played a lot of these already.
Yeah, I imagine that's the same for many people that are thinking of subscribing to this service.
If they're interested in premium stuff, certainly. So to pull out a big list, and we're not going to go through all these because it's 350, but we're talking about things like Limbo, the entire Sorcery series, Old Man's Journey, 80 Days, Wayward Souls. Like, I've played, reviewed all of these games. You've got, like, Titan Quest and Lichtspear is over there. We've got Stardew Valley, Terraria, Knights of the Old Republic, the original one. We've got Monument Valley 1 and 2, Elo, E-L-O-H, a fantastic little musical game there. In the Sim Strategy section, you've got Reigns, the entire series, including Her Majesty and Game of Thrones, Mini Metro, Pocket City, like, the list goes on, and you're going to have to go and check them all out for yourself. But pretty much everything I've named there, we've got a review up already. So it's a consolidation of the best that Google Play has to offer, rather than a brand new collection of exclusive content. So they've kind of counterbalanced that, I think. Whereas Apple's got a lot of new stuff, and it's charging the same. Google's gone, okay, maybe you've got some of these games already, or maybe you've played them already, but instead of 70, there's 350 of the buggers.
It does feel like Google have just found out Apple Arcade was a thing, and then last minute they've like scuppered together, oh, what games can we get and call it a service?
Do you reckon? I think they've been working on it for some time, but I certainly not early enough to justify them like getting developers to make exclusive games for the service. And perhaps that's not really what Google Play is about. Like, for example, like Amazon tried to have its own studio, its own Android studio for a while, and that didn't really work out. And Google Play itself doesn't really release any games. And likewise, I mean, Apple doesn't release Apple iTunes exclusive games, but they do have a few developers who release games exclusively for iOS. And I don't think there are as many, if any, who just like exclusively release games for Google Play and that's it, and they will never port their game anywhere else.
No, and with Stadia on the horizon, you'd think they'd maybe just double down on that and be like, this is our mobile, you know, venture.
Well, they buy out the studio or get exclusivity rights. I don't know, that Stadia's been everywhere, so I don't think they would want to pin themselves down just to Google, the developer, because they've done very, very well on PC and Switch and all the other platforms as well. But it's not necessarily a bad thing. Now, with the games out of the way, what about this subscription stuff, man? You've got a year's free subscription with Apple Arcade, so you're sorted for a while. For everyone else who's going to have to actually cough up $4.99 a month, do we think anyone's going to do this? Because this is the point. This is one of the big changing points in the industry. If this takes off, this is going to completely change the way that people consume games, but also the way that games are made and the type of games that are made. Because this encourages a premium-style game with no in-app purchases, an old-school game experience, if you like, whereas the free-to-play market is doing something completely different, and these two can never really come together. And again, we'll move on to Mario Kart in a bit and see why that might be a bad idea. Uh-huh. So, like, for example, if you were running Google Play, or if you didn't get the free pass, right, for a year, do you think you would buy this?
It's each to your own, isn't it? It depends what you enjoy. For me, I absolutely would, because I tend to go for the premium games, you know. And the free-to-play mechanic is what it is. Sometimes it can be handled well. Sometimes it's handled disastrously. But more often than not, I would prefer to pay for a game outright and just have the full experience than being, like, you know, teased bits and pieces as we go along. So for this, like, to have, what is it, 71 games straight away, all premium experiences, this is absolutely right up my alley. You know, the games we've listed off already, I had a wicked time. The question is, long term, would I stay with it? Because we'll have to see what they roll out, but I've blasted through a few games already. Are a lot of people going to do this, you know, do a couple of months, play what they have, and then cancel the subscription?
Yeah. So, yeah, that's one of the things. So, you could do what some people do with Netflix and Amazon, which is you buy a month or two, consume all the series you want, then bail. And then later on, when they've added some more series you want, you can dip back in again. And I've done that with Amazon Prime, where I've kind of scooched in and scooched out. And that's quite a good way of saving money. And they still get, you know, some money in the end. It's not too bad. The thing that people might find is, if they give them enough games and these people start enough games, so if I've got, you know, like 10 games on the go and then the end of the month comes up, I might be like, well, I don't really want to finish this one and this one. I don't mind those disappearing, but I'm really into these two or three. So these two or three justify me buying another month, for example. So, you know, because a reasonably priced premium game or more expensive end will be £3, £4, £5 anyway for one game. So a lot of people are saying, like, 70 games for the equivalent of buying one premium game a month, that's an absolute bargain. Mm. There's also the other thing with subscription services is that what the purveyors hope you will do is forget you even have it.
Exactly. Yeah, that was what I was going to mention. You know, I think Apple just want to get people through the door and then just completely forget about it.
Because you suddenly go, oh, yeah, I guess. And you look at a bill like in a year's time and go, oh, yeah, I've been subscribed the whole time. And subscriptions can often not feel like real payments, like you're not paying for anything. These games are coming in every month for free. But obviously you are. So as you say, if they can get people in the front door, maybe get them to stick around. And there's also the other side of things, which is that Apple itself is a more premium marketplace, the iTunes store, the App Store. Because of the price of the phones, the people who buy them tend to be in a slightly higher economic status, and they're more likely to hand over cash upfront for premium things, whereas Google Play has had a lot of success with free-to-play games. Mm. So I'm very interested to see how the Google Play Pass takes off, because I think that's going to be a bit of a harder sell to that crowd.
Agreed. I mean, from the mainstream perspective, what I've seen, Apple Arcade seems to, you know, been very welcomed. You've seen many sites who don't normally deal with mobile praising it heavily, and lots of influencers and everything going, oh my God, these specific games are fantastic. Apple Arcade is finally mobile done right. So, yeah, Google Play Pass, I don't know if even if it's getting that much attention.
I think it's being overshadowed a little bit. And I think it's largely because when people go, it's out, and then they start quoting the games, you're like, oh yeah, I've played that, played that one, and yeah, played. So it's not quite creating the same buzz as like Oceanhorn 2 and the new Samogo game and all these games that no one's played until last week. You can't, you know, you can't escape the buzz that we all have. We're all gamers, we like playing the new thing, and you know, we like the shiny object. But also, you know, I'm less inclined to do the Google Play one because a lot of the what they would consider the high tier ones, the big sellers for the service, I've played and completed all of these. I think it's great for people who haven't, and I think if they want to, even if they just do it for a few months, it's totally worth it. Like I'm a big supporter of this kind of thing. I have premium Spotify and I pay for Netflix and all the rest of it. And I don't have an objection to those services at all. And I think this is a nice way of getting a lot of good quality games. And importantly, if it means that premium games can be supported, i.e. the developers get paid and they are allowed to make more games. And that's the problem that we're facing in the future, where certain types of games, small narrative experience, odd little indie excursions and stuff like that, which maybe aren't free to play, are not generating enough revenue for the developers to carry on working. We're seeing this a little bit in the argument between Steam and the Epic exclusivity. Lots of people getting furious at certain developers going over and saying it's going to be exclusive to the Epic store for a year. And the frustration from the player is like, well, I have to download another bloody installer now. I have to deal with another shopfront. That's a pain in the ass. And yes, it is. But at the same time, the developers are basically being given a bunch of money by Epic to be like, look, here's your costs covered. Before you've even released your game, we're going to cover like the majority of your development costs. And it means you can go and make another game now.
Yeah, that's huge. I know. And I think more people need to realize that from a developer standpoint.
And if we want those games, if we want good, high-quality premium games without in-app purchases, we need those games to do well. And the reality is that a lot of them just don't, because people don't want to pay money for when they have a huge library of games they can play for, inverted commas, free. Will this subscription service, you know, hit that little sweet middle ground for people who are used to now Netflix and Spotify and all the rest of it? We will have to wait and see, because we're not even in the premium bit. Everyone's on a free trial right now. The real test will be next month when we see who's stuck with it. So very keen to see what happens there. And it is a big old shift for the industry. Out and about this week. We're only going to focus on a couple here because of all the Apple Arcade stuff, but the biggies are both Nintendo, both Prime Nintendo properties, and one on mobile, one on Switch, which is rare. So, Mario Kart Tour's out.
Yes.
And opinions have been had.
They have.
My God, by everybody. So there's a video of this up. There's a lot of coverage and tips and everything on PG.com. We can go over and check out also friends codes and things like that. We always create a list for all the new games. And it's a really good place to add friends in and do multiplayer stuff or ghost stuff for the time being, because the multiplayer isn't really live yet.
Nope.
In a Mario Kart Tour. So first impressions upon booting this one up. Matthew, what did you think when you loaded it up and started actually dragging your thumb around, taking control of actual real Mario Kart on your mobile?
Mixed, I'm not going to lie. Been quite disappointed. I mean, it is to an extent, it is Mario Kart on mobile, which is great. You know, the sliding mechanics, it feels good. You know, it does feel like Mario Kart. I'm still not keen on the acceleration. I mentioned that when, obviously, the trailers dropped and the betas and everything.
The automatic acceleration.
Yeah, it just feels Mario Kart light. And a lot of the skill, for me, seems taken away.
I don't think you're wrong. Now, I don't have a Switch or anything. I haven't played barely any of the new the Mario Kart 8 Ultra or whatever it's called, the Switch version.
Deluxe.
That's the one. I've played a little bit of it, but I've been out of the Mario Kart loop since the original SNES version. And tracks from that do appear in Mario Kart 2, which is obviously tickling the old nostalgia buds, going, oh, you like that? Remember the past? Wasn't it nice? and it was nice. But I agree with you that it's Mario Kart Lite, and it was always going to be, because you don't have a proper controller with all the buttons on it, and it would be a nightmare if you tried to incorporate that into the game, I think. So it's just automatic acceleration. It's simple drag left, drag right. So you can tap on the screen to use your items or do a speed start. That's about it in terms of controls. It looks the part, it sort of feels the part, albeit there seems to be a lot of steering assist going on, it feels to me. Although there are two different control methods, and one of them is slightly more hardcore, inverted commas. You're playing through a career campaign at the very beginning, so you're just working your way through these four race little tours that unlock as you go. And also they're going to change the content, I think weekly, they're going to shift the tracks around.
That's right, they've started off with a New York... Skyline or something. It's based off New York, I know, but they're doing Paris. It's as in the name, they're touring the planet.
That's right. So it'll be evolving as the game continues to give you reasons to keep coming back. All very good. There will be a proper multiplayer mode, apparently, and I think that comes out sometime in October. And the idea you'll be able to race against actual friends. At the moment, you're racing against what appear to be real people, but I think they're just ghosts of other characters. Because they've got their real player names, but clearly they're not there. Because you can just pause a game and then pick it up 30 minutes later and it carries on.
So, yeah, that's why it's insanely easy at the minute.
Yes, and it's quite easy, isn't it? I haven't lost a race yet after about 2-3 hours of play. The negative stuff, or the really negative stuff. So it's a free-to-play game, of course. You can earn it's rubies or whatever the gem things are. In order to fire them into a gacha to get yourself new characters, new carts, and new gliders. So if you want to get all the characters unlocked, you're going to be dealing with old random gacha nonsense, and you have to keep grinding and grinding, money. Obviously, you can earn these ruby coiny things, but the game is naturally... would be very happy, maybe, if you just handed over 5 or 10 or 20 pounds and bought a whole bunch of the gems and just started collecting all the characters. So the whole pay to acquire thing is very much there.
Yeah, you don't even start with Mario.
No, you don't.
You get a random character to start off with, and I got Toad of all of them, and I was just gutted. I was like, I hate you, Toad.
I got Peach, and then I got Toad. So they're doubling down on that. But yeah, I think they'll be gatekeeping Mario behind a random generator algorithm for a bit and make sure he doesn't turn up too often. The real controversy behind all this, however, isn't the gameplay or isn't the gacha. It's the fact that this free-to-play game has a subscription service in and of itself. So for £4.99, the same amount of money as Apple Arcade and the Google Play Pass, you can get from Mario Kart the 200cc class, which is currently locked and you can't get to. You get 50cc, 100cc, and I presume it unlocks 150 as well.
Yes, you've got them three.
Yeah. You can't get 200cc unless you subscribe. You can't buy it. You can't unlock it through any other means. Subscribe $499 a month. You get the 200cc class, and you get some additional kind of cosmetic items. There are some gold things, badges and stuff like that that you can get. And that's pretty much it.
Yeah, it's pretty disgusting, to be honest. It's not great. Very disappointed. It's more the 200cc being locked behind than anything. I mean, that is a fundamental game mode. You know, it was introduced only in the last few Mario Karts, but... mm-hmm. You know, it's the quickest. It's the most difficult mode. It's just a very, very strange decision. And, you know, you've mentioned the cost, same price as Apple Arcade. You know, Nintendo Switch Online for the years, $17.99. So it's, you know, nearly double.
Yeah, it's a very weird thing. So a little bit of background. Super Mario Run didn't do what Nintendo wanted it to do. It did sell very well by any standards of a premium game on mobile. It did well. It did not do the kind of well that Nintendo want, which is more like the Clash Royale well. The absolute, you know, the millions and millions and millions every month, month after month, go, 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 go. They wanted to try the free-to-play option, and they've been trying to refine that ever since, and you can see that in things like Fire Emblem Heroes and subsequent games.
Dragalia Lost.
Yes, very much so, which I think is doing better than the other ones.
Both of them, yeah. Fire Emblem Heroes, Dragalia doing very well. Fire Emblem's been a massive cash cow for them. Mm-hmm. And it's actually interesting. So, yeah, I don't know if you saw, obviously there's a lot of negativity around the game at the minute, but it did actually do 20 million downloads within its first 24 hours.
That doesn't surprise me in the slightest. Like, it's free to download, and it's Mario Kart, one of the most popular franchises of all time, arguably the most popular racing franchise ever.
Mm, but that's so, bigger. That's bigger than Pokemon Go and Super Mario Run. Super Mario Run only did 7.
Wow! Again, that was a premium thing, so you had to, you know, cough up. Although I think they give you maybe a level or two free at the beginning of that one.
Yes, but, I think the first world. Yes.
Yeah, this appeals to so many people, absolutely everybody, and. They've teamed up with other mobile-centric developers. They've been working with DNA to try and use their expertise on how do you make a game which sustains itself, a game that keeps going and going, a game that is an active service game where things are being updated all the time and people are putting money in, not once at the beginning, but every month and or every week or whatever it might be. And they've come to the same conclusion as Apple Arcade and all the rest of them, which is subscription. But it's just one mode. And it's a lot of money for just unlock the 200cc. My feeling is that, like, that's going to be where all the cool multiplayer kids hang out. When it goes properly multiplayer, people are going to want to race 200cc. And then if it starts getting competitive in any way, then that's going to be that class. So it's like going to be this hardcore mode. I mean, I'm not even sure how hardcore it'll be because it still feels quite simplified and stripped down. But that's my sort of gut feeling about what they're doing. But the reaction's been terrible, as you say. Like, whether you're the player or the press or whatever, everyone's kind of gone, this feels horrible.
And I need to take a shower after playing this game.
Well, they can do what they like. It's their game, and the majority of the game was still available. But it feels like they're just, like, throwing things at the wall. Like, maybe this will get us the thing, and maybe we'll do the subscription, but only for a tiny bit of the game. And a super hardcore amount of people who don't care will pay what is the equivalent of like sort of £240 a year or something. No, not quite that much. My maths is rubbish. But more like £60 a year just to play the 200cc mode. It's like, guys, I'm not feeling this. This feels a bit grim.
Yeah, I'd be interested to see how Nintendo approach it. I mean, they still don't seem to understand the mobile market properly.
No.
I think,
which is ironic, because they've been the kings of mobile, as in portable gaming, since the Game Boy. They're the only company who's been able to do it right, but what they haven't been able to convert to is this weird mobile free-to-play system. Mm. They haven't quite got the hang of it yet.
If it was just the gacha system, I think more people would have been on board, but it's because it's both. It's too much.
It's like randomized characters that you have to grind for, and if you want to get the characters you want, you're going to have to pay, and you have to pay a subscription on top for the fastest racing class. It's like, I don't know, man. I would not be surprised if at some point they made some changes to this.
Agreed. Those 20 million downloads, that's for day one. I'm very interested in see how it's doing in a month.
Yeah, and we'll see who signs up and who doesn't, and whether they cut the price of it or maybe scrap it altogether. I don't know. We'll see how they react. But you can see gameplay of it up, and you can see a lot of opinions, and also all the tip stuff we mentioned before, if you are involved and you do want to carry on playing. Now, the other side of the coin is, over on the Switch, we have got a remake of a beloved classic, and that's the game that you've been playing, right?
That's right. So, Legend of Zelda Link's Awakening, the 1993 Game Boy Color, I believe.
I think so, yeah.
Release. Yeah, so Nintendo have basically done a full remake from the ground up. If you've seen this game, it's absolutely gorgeous. It's a very, like, claymation sort of art style. It's beautiful. It's I don't know if you've seen it yourself.
I have seen it running. I saw the trailers when they originally released. I haven't played it, obviously, but yeah, it's using that almost tilt shift focus thing, so that the center of the screen is very, very sharp and the rest of it less so. As you're right, it does feel like a very, like, shiny claymation. It's very tactile. It feels like you want to reach out and give him a little squeeze his little nose. Isn't he cute?
He is adorable. Little Link and everything, with his little eyes and everything.
So I've been impressed by the visuals of it. Give us the gameplay rundown before we hit the things that people have been complaining about.
Yeah, so it's a top-down. It's as traditional 2D Legend of Zelda as you can get. Well, obviously now 2.5 3D, but it's as traditional as you can get, which is nice. It's a nice return after Breath of the Wild, which blew the, you know, franchise apart, did something completely different. And I've loved it. I am nearly completed it. If I hadn't, I went briefly to Copenhagen for the Unite conference. Right. So I've been there this week. But I blasted through 6 of the 8 dungeons.
Very nice.
The first weekend it was out. And the whole story is basically Link appears on this island and he's told he's got to reawaken the wind fish by collecting these musical instruments to leave the island. And it's all about unraveling the story behind that and everything. And it's just perfect Zelda. You know, you're doing this, the dungeons and everything. It's all classical. It's all fantastic. It's not as difficult as I was expecting. That's one of my little critiques. You know, I am blasting through it, but I've seen already a lot of people putting up just being like, oh, I've completed the game, not one death.
Right, okay.
But I don't think that's a bad thing, you know. It's fun, and that's the major thing at the end of the day.
That's what you're looking for. Well, I can't fault it artistically. Obviously, I haven't played it. Maybe the simplicity, or it's down to the source material, because it is a remake of a Game Boy game, which was on a much smaller screen. So maybe they had to make accommodations for that when they were designing it. So that comes over in the translation. I don't know. The issues that I've heard discussed is frame rate. That it's doing weird stuff with the frame rate, and it's making people's eyes go funny. Have you experienced that or not?
A little bit. I mean, I don't think it's as bad as people have been making out. It's just, it tends to be when you're actually in the open fields. So when you're in a dungeon, it's never apparent. But as you said, you know, there's like blurred lines on the top and bottom of the screen. And then when you move up, they all become clearer. Yeah. But it's normally because there's so much around. So there's loads of like grass and plants and stuff that Link cuts down with his sword to generate all of, the textures and everything. It does seem to take a lot of the power away from the Switch, and that seems to be what's causing the frame rates. But it's not anything, from my experience, not anything that's going to ruin the game or, you know, you're going to die by accident from it.
No, I think for some people, this is a problem when a game is otherwise running at what looks like a rock solid, like 60 frames per second. It seems to be in the trailers, like incredibly high frame rate. So when you get stutters on that and it suddenly starts to drop or it's inconsistent in some way, you really notice it. Whereas if you have 30 frames per second, but it's rock solid, the consistency masks a lot of the issues. So I think it's just a case of it tops out at 60, but when it takes a dip, you're like, oh, it looks a bit weird now. Oh no, it's back to normal again. And I think that's what's throwing people off, and it's making them do weird blinking. But as long as it's not interfering for you with the overall experience too much, then that's great.
No, there's so much to love about this game. You know, the characters, every little city you go to. I mean, the map itself, compared to other Legend of Zelda games, it's pretty tiny, but it all gels together so well that the whole game doesn't feel small, if you see what I mean. You know, you do learn the whole map. By the time you get to the game, you know you'll know the map inside out. But each area feels still like that traditional Zelda. You know, this is the water section. This is the more underground section. This is the more ruin section.
Gotcha.
Ghost section, etc. Yeah. I think if you like any Zelda, this is one to try. It's great. I think that's the point I'm trying to put across.
I'm feeling that. I'm glad you've got a real buzz about you for this one.
No, I love it. I mean, it's great to see as well that it's done very well in the charts in the UK. It's only the third Zelda game to ever become number one.
Oh yeah, yeah.
Because it was I think it's Ocarina of Time, and then it was Twilight Princess, I believe. I think they're the only. It was Wind Waker. The only two ever to go number one, so that's huge for the Switch itself. And
it is, it's an exclusive as well, and that obviously, you know, bumps up the numbers a bit. But I'm delighted to hear that this is good. It looked pretty from the outset, and I'm glad everyone's responding, bar the occasional frame rate gripe. So that is currently available right now for your Switch. You'll be able to see the review of it up on PG.com. Do go and have a look at that. We're going to leave it there because I've got to continue packing cameras into a bag to get out of here and go to Helsinki. But thank you for bearing with us during the pause. We're very, very pleased to be back. we were missing it. And we will catch up with you next week when I will be probably a bit like sozzled.
Yes.
After the expedition. But you're going travelling as well, aren't you?
I am. I'm off to Australia for 2 weeks.
Goodness me. All right then, well.
Melbourne enjoy Games that. Week.
Games Week, fantastic. Do have fun there, and
Thank
we'll
you.
Probably get Dan back on for next week. And in the meantime, go try all these subscription services for free at the beginning anyway. Play some cool stuff. We will see you next time. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.